This is episode 252. This stinks of Greg Wells.
On this one, our kids are on antibiotics, but we also talk about 8-string guitars and what producers sound like and whether the loudness war
is still over.
Firing yeah. shots. Yeah.
Yeah. We thought there was a ceasefire and Blink-182 has entered the chat.
Oh, no. Called out. All right. All right.
Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a typical Tone Control Monday. Yeah. A race to the, it's a race to the finish and we made it.
It was a little bit here too. Yeah.
Yep.
Things are all wild. Did the crock pot thing. I pulled a Justin and I was like, I'm going to crock pot it tonight because I had a thing after work. Chicken chili.
We had chicken chili. No shit.
Fuck you.
Still a bunch in the crock pot.
Same.
Are you kidding me right now?
Look at us.
Oh my God. All right. We're making a change. We're going to change where Aria does her therapy appointments.
Oh, okay.
Because that's what's been going on Tone Control Mondays. And it means I got to drive to Kentucky through all the traffic after school and then drive back. And it's all this ridiculous thing. Yeah. So we've done some moving around. We're going to try a new person who's very close.
Good.
And hopefully. So we went to the last one today, sort of the closeout Kentucky meeting. And
the old closeout Kentucky.
The old closeout Kentucky. So
the old Kentucky closeout.
come next Tone Control Monday. I mean, whatever. Marielle's going to still get home like right at the last fucking minute in time for us to eat some. You know what I mean? But the point is,
it'll take a little strain off. Yeah,
it'll be a little bit different. So anyway,
cool.
But yeah, everybody's good. Our kids are on Ceftonir.
My kid is now on. No, what is he on? Shoot. It's a psyllin. What is it? Shoot. Not penicillin. Oh. Amoxicillin. He's on.
There's a psyllin that isn't. Those are the only two psyllins I know, I think.
Frig. I cannot remember the name of it.
Well, we spoke yesterday and both of our kids were on Ceftonir, which is an antibiotic. For if anyone in the audience who doesn't have small children and might not be up on your antibiotics.
Yeah. Yeah, Jack has strep again, so he's on I'm trying to like muscle memory my way into remembering the name.
There's so many, but it's a
maybe
psyllin
it's not
family
a
one.
Jesus, I got a text back. Oh, what is it called? It's gonna make me. I'm not gonna be able to focus.
Yeah. Well, we're in ear infection zone over here. Although the doctor said her throat did not look happy. But she says it's not bothering her, and he's like, whatever, I'll treat the ear infection, and it'll take care of it. So either way, but so strep, 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 and then some strep, and a little bit of strep sprinkled on top
over
there.
Some strep, just all in and around.
Yeah.
Beth and I are doing fine. But he had strep, and then remember when I was like, oh, he's got some viral thing? No, that turned out to be strep.
Right. Yeah.
And then
which is usually nice because then you have a treatment.
It's not a psyllin. It's a myosin. It's azithromycin.
Oh, azithromycin. Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, he's on.
So they're bringing out the big guns, though. That's what's
the
happening.
Big guns.
Yeah.
And it's a once a day instead of a twice a day, which is great. So, it's working a lot better this time. I'll say that.
Yeah.
I know that much. It's only been a day and a half, and he's feeling much better. So,
right on.
Yeah. Yep, so he like reinfected himself, we think, because he's a baby and puts everything in his mouth. So, hey.
It's actually
pretty easy
to do with strep. Humans have like a endemic strep population in your bodies at all times. Anyone who can hear my voice, guess what? There's some strep in your mouth.
Ew.
It's just a matter of whether it blooms out of control. That's when it becomes, a problem. So,
Anyway. I have a thing to share right now.
Right now?
Really excited about.
Do you need me to sound
No,
effect
I don't need
it?
You
nope.
to do.
Okay.
No. I'm drinking this from Halyard Brewing Company, hard ginger beer.
Oh, okay. And brewed I see it says mango on it. Yeah.
Brewed with mango. And Justin, I just saw it at Trader Joe's and I was like, that sounds like something I might want to dabble in. Mm-hmm. I was right. This was a good choice. This stuff rips. It's really good. It is really good. I love ginger stuff. So just throwing that as an early recommendation.
Early rec. I love
it's
when
not,
something's
it's not
called
super a, boozy, but yeah.
When something that's called a beer, but it also has to be called a hard beer.
Yeah, it's a hard beer.
Be careful.
I like
this
my beer
one's
is
a hard.
Beer.
Yeah.
It's very good. I just cracked it open and came up here, and now I'm like, uh-oh.
Having a great time. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Congratulations. I just have some typical nonsense, you know, Mandarin soda-ish
cool.
stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Seltzery things. I guess that doesn't... I say soda, but that's wrong, isn't it? It's not soda?
I don't know.
Does it count as soda?
What do they call it where you are? Is it pop or soft drink or... one of those soft weird things.
I don't know. I don't leave my house. I don't interact with
okay,
people
fair,
who are
yeah.
from here.
Yeah.
What is it in Ohio? I think.
I feel like you're on a border there with that. Kind of thing.
We are. There's a few mixers. I think right over the border in Indiana, it's very pop. I think Marielle was tending toward pop. It's not one of the places where everything's a Coke. That's the only one that really
bothers
me.
That's a smaller region, I think.
Yeah, I think like that's
that
not,
bothers me too.
It's
that's
not
a brand.
Right. Yeah, you're just part of the problem. But I don't mind pop, soda. Now I can't think of others. I think there are others.
Well,
right?
There are others. My mother-in-law calls it tonic.
Tonic. Well, see, that's a specific thing.
Tonic
is a soda with quinine in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not. So she's just unaware
it's the hyper,
of other sodas.
It's the hyper-regional
yeah.
Boston thing. But yeah, tonic. You want a tonic? Like, do you have gin?
Right. Right, exactly.
But she means like a Diet Pepsi or something.
It's
you
like
know.
She either means gin or she means homemade medicine, right? As far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
What are you drugging me with?
A tincture.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. This thing rules. I just took another sip. Can confirm it's still great.
Still great. All right. Well, you know what we can do is we can do some show discussion. We can check back in on the soda, see how it's going.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think you mean the hard beer.
The hard soft drink.
Yeah. Firm drink.
Oh my lord. Okay. All right.
Is there anything else going on? I don't know. Is it like I feel like it's all the same shit now. Like we're both teaching,
it
we
is,
both have kids who are sick sometimes and like big surprise.
Big right. It's like what are we just come on. You know, it was I'll tell you what. You know what? The weather. It was warm today. Figure that out.
Nah. Oh, the time changed.
Yep. I don't think that's what made it warm.
No, I'm just saying. Like,
oh, that
guess who did?
Thing.
Yeah, guess who did absolutely nothing to prepare their 1-year-old for the time change? It is I. Yeah. It's your boy, me.
This is the easier one, though, for kids, yes?
I don't actually know. Because last two times, Jack was too little for it to matter.
Right.
So this was the first one. I was up at 4 o'clock this morning. I'll just leave it there.
Okay.
And he was pretty much done sleeping.
It was over for him.
He was kind of dozing and stuff, but I couldn't get him back down.
Yeah.
And so it has been a long day.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I think I'm just about, well, I think this, at least for kids more older, this is the easier one. So this is the clocks go ahead, right? No. God damn, I can never fucking remember what it is. Anyway,
you know the saying, spring ahead, fall back.
Yeah, but I don't know what that means. Like, that's the thing. Like,
it means the clock goes ahead or back.
So fall back, so the clock, so we experience the same hour twice in the fall.
Right.
Okay.
So at 1 o'clock in the morning, it goes from like 1:59 back to 1.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I honestly, this is... whatever truth, you can make fun of me if you want. Anyone, I have never fucking understood. I know that saying, it's meaningless to me. So, but this was the easier one for her, at least, because basically she just was a little bit more tired than normal at night.
Fine.
And like,
that's the time to be tired.
Right, exactly. So that's fine. So we're fine with that.
Yeah.
I think the other one where she suddenly has to wake up an hour earlier, that one really throws her. So,
yeah. I think, I was talking to Pete, the co-host of my Super Secret Dad Club podcast, and he mentioned last year they were doing the 50, you're supposed to like move your kids' bedtime 15 minutes a day for
deception.
For little kids.
You could be
anyway,
honest about it. Yeah.
For little kids, it really helps with the switch. And he was like, oh yeah, 1 year we got it backwards. And then when the time changed,
her 2 hours off,
2 hours off the wrong direction.
Oh my God. Oh, that's awful. I think we might've done that one of those early years.
Yeah, I thought like, well, I was banking on him being too small for it to matter.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was wrong. So, but yeah,
it depends. I think it's like different people, different, you know,
yeah,
different human beings. You know, it matters. Yeah,
I mean, it'll shake out in a few days. It's not that big a deal. But I don't think we need daylight saving anymore. And
no.
Two, if we're going to have it, can it be the other way? Because I don't need the days shorter when they're already short.
Yeah. I'm also like, I'm really pissed because I thought all last year I had basically been told that it was over with. We're finally done with it. They put the bill in and I kept telling people that. And I was like, no, I heard this on the news. And then of course there was a bill, but it absolutely didn't even like go to vote. It was like, no, nowhere close. Because of course you couldn't come to consensus on this.
Yeah.
And it just leaves me going like, what the actual fuck? Like it's so stupid.
Archaic.
So here's, and I bet we even whined about this in the podcast last time. It's so stupid. All of the reasons that people think that it was invented for are like not the real reason. And like,
I've heard it was agriculture was the reason.
But that's absolutely not right. Because you know what agriculture doesn't care about? What the clock says. They care about what the sun does. And they don't care at all. So it's something to do with like schools and weird shit like that. But none of it matters at all anymore. We have electric lights. So the thing is, there is no difference. There's no statistical difference in what happens depending on what time we're on. And the only thing that happens is there are more injuries and deaths right when the time change happens every year.
Yeah, because people don't turn their headlights on.
Because people forget, people are off their schedules. It's this like ambient effect, right? And they just, they fuck up, they crash their cars, they miss work, they do all kinds of stupid shit because stuff just changed suddenly for no fucking reason. So just stop it changing. And there's a couple of states that don't change. And you know what? Everybody there is better off.
There's parts of Arizona. So SNHU, the company I work for, has some offices or did have some offices in New Mexico, right? No, I'm sorry, in Arizona. Yeah,
Arizona is the one, the one that I know about anyway.
And so we hired a bunch of local staff from there. And so depending if we're working with them, right, the time zone meeting coordination stuff gets weird depending on the time of year because they're 2 or 3 hours behind.
Right.
Depending on when it is. But the other thing is international daylight saving still occurs, but not all at the same time.
Right.
Right. And
Britain changes like
it's like
3 or 4 weeks off from us.
Yeah. And in the Southern Hemisphere, it's the opposite. So trying to schedule international meetings in this time is fucking nutso.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, Doug's going on about how we can't even agree to get rid of the penny. I've literally thrown pennies away. That's where I'm at on the penny.
I
suck them up in the vacuum and I'm like, see ya.
Right. But the trouble with the time change business is every time this comes up, nobody will relent on my time is the correct time, right?
And that's I don't care which one it is.
Everybody agrees that it shouldn't change anymore, but it's like 49-49 about which one it should be.
Let's just split the difference down the half hour and then reset the hour.
Fucking exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah.
You know what? we're the United States. Everybody already thinks this way about us. Let's just switch it to a half an hour and say the rest of the world, fuck you.
Well, India is on a 30-minute time zone difference.
Yeah. There's some other fucking place that has like a, there's like a little place somewhere that has like a 15-minute difference too. I don't know. I don't remember. It's, but like.
Thanks a lot, British Empire.
I just say like, let's do it. Let's just do it. You know what's going to be bad though is Arizona is going to not change and they'll be a half hour off from the rest of the country.
Oh my God.
they'll be like, we already settled this. We're not going to follow you down this stupid hole, the United States.
I think it's Arizona or New Mexico, somewhere in the Southwest. There's regions within the state that do and don't follow it because of land reservations and things like that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that's true. Arizona as a state doesn't. So like there's a state line right on the Hoover Dam. And when I was visiting that area, when I was 16, it was in the summer and it happened to be where there wasn't a time change halfway across the dam. But it's because one of the states doesn't, you know, Arizona doesn't change. Yeah. So half of the year, there is an hour difference if you're on one side of the dam.
Oh, my parents ran into that a little while back. They were traveling out west and they had to like drive from one place through the time zone change into another place. And it was like the daylight
of Arizona.
Yeah. And the daylight saving thing happened. And it was like, okay, so if we have to leave here to get to the event at this time and like, you could not figure it out
over.
Because,
oh
yeah,
my God,
it's like, we need to be in mountain time at this, but it's in Arizona where they don't have the time change, but we're in Pacific now. And
oh, it's like
long division. It was so weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Anyway, that was a good tangent.
That was a hell of a rant.
We were like, I was starting to think.
I just like panic and looked at my thing to make sure it was recording. Yep. Remember to push record, everybody.
Good job.
Yeah. Still have it.
ginger beer update. Still good.
Ginger beer update. I'm going to play. You know what it's going to be? It's going to be. Wait, I got to find it. God damn it. I can't read. I can read. That's the ginger beer stab. So eagle-eyed YouTube viewers might have noticed, actually, that I think it was just barely in view of the camera because I got the sides cut off a little bit. Anyway, just barely in view of the camera during our stupid non-guitar conversation was a guitar.
Ooh, I was bashing on my desk. I got a new guitar.
Yeah.
You'll notice there's two more tuners on this than normal. I bought an 8-string.
That's so much strings, Derek.
I bought an 8-string.
Yeah.
Really impulsively. And the price had a lot to do with it because I am very interested in the things that people do with guitars like this, but to get a decent one.
Not like $1,000 interested.
No, definitely not. And it is definitely not the space that I tend to hang out in with guitar stuff.
Yeah.
So I was never going to, aside from fiddling around at a guitar store, never going to invest in like an extended range guitar because it's just, you know,
that's a category that I like that extended range guitar.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like the whole world basically that isn't just 6-string standard length, right?
Right. Or baritone.
So baritone isn't extended range.
I think it's technically extended range, but it's like a standardized version of it.
Shifted range.
Yes, because this has the range of a 6-string guitar. It's just it extends lower.
Yeah.
So this is the Harley Benton, some weird model name, R458MN.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Harley Benton is the store brand, so to speak, for Thomann in Germany. And they just started distributing in the US. And they're selling on Reverb. It ships from Connecticut, which means I ordered it and it got here the next day.
Oh, shit.
Free shipping, 30-day returns, right? Like there was like such little risk involved in picking this thing up. And I'm going to cut to the chase. It was $269.
Yeah. So technically I showed it on the screen. So the store page,
remarkably affordable. And I was like, you know, for 30-day free returns and free shipping and stuff, like, if it's real dog shit, like, I will just send it back and, like, just figure out, just this isn't for me, you know? Oh, I'll get my money back or something. But check it out. It's a fan fret, multi-scale, 8-string guitar. It's magnificent.
It looks, like, really cool.
It looks so fucking cool. And so here's the thing about fan frets. If you're not familiar, it's when the frets are not parallel to each other, they are, I guess, where is the straightest fret on this? Probably.
It would have to be the 13th, right?
No, it's not. It's, you can see it there. It's closer to like the 9th. So it's a 6-string guitar with two lower strings added. Okay,
you said the frets aren't straight. They are straight.
But they are straight.
The angle fanned between every single one is different.
Yes, because they're the not scale parallel length.
Yeah.
That's right. They are not perfectly perpendicular to the neck.
Yeah.
One of them is, but not all of them. So the bridge and the nut are both at inverse angles to each other.
Yeah.
And it's because the scale length of each string is different.
Yeah, compound scale, I think that it's called, right?
Maybe. That sounds like where, it'd be right.
I've heard that before about this. So I feel like that's a very good, like, technical term, right?
Heard it as multi-scale.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
Multiscale. Are you thinking of compound radius?
Well, I've heard that too, but I don't know. Now you got me thinking I made it up and I heard multiscale. either one might make sense. So multiscale, instead of it being a 30,
right,
Fender's
a 25.5-inch scale, Gibson's a 24.75-inch scale. So all the strings are the same scale length. And then you have like your micro adjustments at the saddle for intonation and stuff like that.
Right.
So this guitar goes from 25.5-inch on the high E to 27.25 on the low F sharp. So this bitch is low. Like, it is like
bass strings down there.
Very low. And so, speaking of strings, it came stock with 9 to 65s.
Yeah.
And I just ordered a set of from Stringjoy that are 9 to 72.
70 something, you said. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I wanted a little more tension on the lows. Mm-hmm. It is a bit floppy. You can hit it too hard and pull it sharp. But that means, guys, are you ready? If you drop your lowest string, you are in double drop E, basically. So it's fucking crazy. I am super pleased with this guitar. I cannot believe how good it is. And not even like for the money. It's one of those like difference things of just, so yeah, it's like made in China and stuff like that. And it's, there are some expected areas of improvement, I think.
Okay.
The tuners are a little weak. They just don't feel like super sturdy. The nut is nylon or something like that. The pickups are just the pickups. And like, so you could throw a bunch of money into this and get it into an insane guitar for short money. The frets are good.
You must need kind of a custom sized pickup though to, I'm looking
at any 8-string pickup will fit in there. The pickup isn't fanned.
All right. You know? All right. I suppose this isn't the first 8-string guitar.
No.
So no, the pickup, right. It's just set in the body in a way that it'll fit. Yeah.
Yeah. So the frets are pretty good. I think I might take, once I get some new strings on it, I'll probably hit them with like a polishing wheel for my Dremel. But the ends on the treble side are a little pokey, but not
okay.
Like I've had worse.
Stand to be ground, sanded down.
Yeah, just like with a little kiss it with a file, you know, just a zoop, yeah, and you're good. It's not crazy. There's no frets popping or anything. I haven't found any dead spots really, but I'm not really playing guitar on this guitar, if you know what I mean.
You're playing the earth.
I'm playing the earth. Yes.
Yeah.
So it's got a 14-inch radius on it, or it's like a 13 and change because it's all metric. And okay. It's $270, and it's really, really fun. So I think I can very comfortably recommend Harley Benton to people.
Yeah.
Because they make guitars up into this like $600 range or so. And
So at something like half that, they're doing, you know, there's a playable good guitar work here. Yeah.
So the only thing I have changed so far is when it came in, the treble side. Oh my God. The treble side of the nut was because of the fan orientation, when you're playing down in the low register,
yeah,
the corner of the nut was like sharp. And oh, okay, it was like poking my index finger. So I just, again, took a little like buffing wheel on my Dremel and just sort of rounded it over. And it's great. I might hit it with like a nail file or something next.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, tuners.
That and just getting used to it so you don't whack your hand onto the wrong, you know, because obviously there's a little adjustment in your left hand that needs to happen.
So here's the thing about fan frets. This is the second one I've ever had some time with.
Yeah.
I am routinely shocked at how not a big deal the fan fret feels. It is.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's you adjust to it almost instantly, or I do anyway, I guess. I don't know if that's true for everybody, but going back to a regular guitar, it's like, oh, I have to go to where the note is, right? I don't, the note isn't where my hand is.
Yeah.
So,
you know, like I've often kind of, as I thought about this multi-scale, that whole thing, like music is multi-scale. It's, you know, as I think about it, like it's actually, having guitars with parallel frets has been an exercise in fine tuning everything just right, you know, and it makes me think about, like we were talking about the tuners that are on my guitar, that where every string is a different tuning ratio, because it makes it so that you have about one full turn pull per tone based on the thickness of the string, and all these like accommodations, thickness of the strings, those little micro adjustments at the bridge to get the intonation just right on any guitar, and the struggles that you have on some guitars, like that all basically disappears with this. Because
sort of,
like, you're just accepting that it's like a natural thing. Like notes are ratios of each other to begin with.
And
it's not like a number line where it's 1, 2, 3. It's like 1, 2, 4, 8, and so on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And with all guitars, really, because of intonation, that, you know, guitars that are not multi-scale, the intonation thing is a compromise, right?
That's a much shorter way of saying all the shit that I said.
So you can, like, yes, if you go back to like 3-barrel saddle Telecasters, you can't really get those like dead nuts on intonated without compensated
type and the
and the compensated does the job, but like that's a modification, right?
But even not the standard saddle thing. The fact that you have them all offset at strange things, mm-hmm, like that. That is a visualization of the compromise that we're making when we try to make these things with parallel frets. And I just think it makes so much more sense to do it this way, because that is how the strings will naturally pair with each other to create these ratios of tones.
Yep. So,
you know,
this is still fully intonatable saddles, of course, because that is still a factor. But the
one
multi-scale
of them is never
going
to stick way past the other ones they're just happier.
Yeah, they're all in a great spot. And the bridge,
yeah,
I don't even, it's just like, you know, stock hardware. It's very comfortable. It's a great bridge. It's a string through body. It's a maple neck, maple fretboard, really thin neck. And this guitar is super lightweight. I haven't actually weighed it yet, but I was blown away at how lightweight it is. The body is basswood, which you see a lot with like these extended range guitars. What else? It's awesome. It's got these offset fret markers, which I love. And there's no double.
They're at the top. Is that what that means?
Yeah, like they're not in the center of the fretboard. They're just like kind of understated near the on the bass side. And there's no double fret marker at the 12th fret. There is on the side, but not on the fretboard. Okay. And then there's a 3-dot inlay at the 24th fret.
just to make it
fuck you. But the big reason you're doing multi-scale is for string tension, right? Is so you can get that.
Again, they're
that
just happier
right
that way.
Feel. It's just like, this is the evolution of guitars. And like Doug said in the chat, it's a step below true temperament frets. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you can do the intonation at the fret as well.
Right. And I've seen guitars that where there's like six
the frets are
individual
squiggly.
Little frets and they move all around. And that's stupid too. But
could you imagine cutting the slots for those?
Well, this is the thing. So why weren't instruments created like this to begin with? And I think it has to be just like engineering tooling from you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago when you're starting to make instruments. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, you could do this with like a string and a protractor and you can kind of like lay these out. But imagine how far away from the neck you'd have to be. Like you're saying like it's a 14-inch radius on the neck. So that's kind of what I'm thinking of. Imagine those fan frets across the instrument in your lap, the radius of how far you'd have to be before those lines would all meet.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's like carpentry-wise, that's where you'd have to be to cut the fret lines. And so that's why, I mean, we can do it with a computer, with a machine now. Yeah. And it's pretty trivial if with the right tool. But I mean, hundreds of years ago, that's probably why we instead chose to just try desperately to intonate the bridge instead, you know?
Yeah, right, with little screws and springs. And, it's a reasonable solution considering the tech of the time and the designs of the time and all that stuff. So, and it works. It's totally serviceable. So this thing, though, I cannot speak highly enough about it. It's really, really fun. I'm really, really happy with it and glad I got it. I don't know if I'm going to invest, so to speak, in modifying it. Like, I don't want to dump, you know, Fishman Fluence 8-string pickups, for example, are like over $300, right? So I'd be more exceeding the value. Yeah.
Exceeding the cost.
But the other thing that's fun is I got this partly because I have a Helix, right? I have plugins and things that I can run this into for guitar amp rigs and setups that I do not own the hardware for, because I don't really have to, you know, I can make these impossible sounds with this instrument and get the most out of it by just going digital. And that's super cool. Like, so that lifted a barrier to entry on it. The price lifted a major barrier to entry on it. And, you know, there's like little to lose, especially with their 30-day returns and free shipping and stuff. I was kind of like, it's just like a trial at that point, but I'm keeping it.
Biroing.
Yeah. Like I got the shipment email. And it got here Saturday.
With you for like 2 days,
Yeah. So, like, good news, your order's on its way. Okay. Oh my God. Obviously, the fretboard is fucking massive. Like, you could land a plane on it.
Yeah.
So that takes some getting used to. But it's got two humbuckers.
Like your chord forms and stuff. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
so here's the thing.
How's this landing with you right now?
So when you were to play like an E, a low E power chord, right? My brain anyway, I don't know if this is true for everybody, thinks, okay, the lowest string and, you know, second fret on the second lowest string.
Right.
My brain thinks of that like lowest, highest, middlest, what, you know, whatever, as far as where the note placement is. Which may not be the best idea, but now if my brain is like, that's cool, F-sharp. Lowest string, that's fucking F sharp now. It's, yeah. So playing riffs and stuff and you're like, oh, I need to hit the G string on that, not the D. And it's like, oh, it's way down here. Yeah. And so it has all the range of a standard electric guitar. It's just added low range. So it's got two humbuckers, a three-way pickup selector and a master tone, master volume. I have this Helix preset that I've made that I've dubbed the Hateful Eight. And it's the other, I'll just cut to the chase, I guess.
Yeah. That's the chase.
That's F sharp. So it, there
sounds
is a
like,
lot.
It sounds like Doom. Yep.
Yeah, it's extremely fun to just sit around and play half steps with.
Yeah.
I will say, though, you cannot play this like a regular guitar because there is so much extra stuff happening in the sonic register.
Yeah.
So big, not even big, straight up power chords, two note chords, are sometimes too full in the lowest range. Because there's so much harmonic content in these single notes.
So if if you just play like a typical power chord on the sixth string part of the, and like don't strike the low string.
I got to look for it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm using a pretty strongly toned amp.
Is extremely metal. Like your amp setting is extremely fucking metal. Besides that, it sounds pretty much like a regular guitar.
Yeah, like you can hear the two notes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm assuming you're like with a palm or a thumb or something, you're preventing the other low strings from just sort of ringing out. Yeah.
So yeah, you got to be really practiced with muting. Right. Muting hard and because the strings are so massive that if you just kind of lightly touch it like you're kind of used to on a six string, it's not enough to stop it from making noise. So there is a very tight gate on this preset. It was actually tighter and I loosened it up a little bit, but you know, really tight noise gates are the way to go. But so here's a note, a single note, F sharp. And if I add the fifth over that, it's like extra muddy. It's just too much.
It's too low. The frequencies are so close together.
Yeah. That's clash in a way. And I'm like playing along to songs and stuff and learning riffs. I'm like, oh, did I slip out of tune? No, it's just there's too much information.
Yeah. I mean, that's why, so like in song arrangements and stuff like that, like very low bass notes need to be perfectly in tune or they fuck up the entire song. And that's it, because like way down there, once again, because notes are ratios of each other, higher notes are farther apart than lower notes. And you get the physical vibrations, fucking, this stuff is bananas.
It's extremely fun. Extremely fun. Like I cannot... I'm so glad I got it. Oh, fucking filthy. You know what I mean? And so if you're like curious about songs and stuff in this tuning, the whole album Diamond Eyes by Deftones is in this register, in this tuning. Yeah.
Yep.
And then it's, you know, a regular guitar as well. So it has this note in it. So. But like, God. So I'm learning all these songs that are some favorites of mine that I've never been able to play, because it opens up seven string riffs, it opens up eight string riffs, and then there's some other sort of accepted tunings for these big range guitars too that are not just E, A, D, G, B, E plus low B and F sharp.
Plus, yeah.
Yeah, you can do some other stuff. So it's fucking killer. So anyway, that's the bridge pickup. The neck pickup sounds remarkably similar because it's just the same stuff.
It's just like, what do you think it's going to be? What is going to be different about it?
Middle. So I got I've not plugged this into a clean sound yet in the 3 days that I've had it. You know.
Well, I mean, what would you do with it? Why would you?
All F sharps. So anyway,
all the F sharps.
Yeah, kind of a bummer. The nut width is so wide it doesn't fit in my headstock holding style stands. So I gotta like kind of wedge it in. So I gotta get go in like sideways and then So anyway, the Harley Benton stuff, they're playing for keeps. And I would, if you're curious about it, I would absolutely recommend it.
It's kind of a good, don't be scared of the low cost to try it out.
Exactly. Here, you can see what I got to do here. I got to like go in and then turn it.
And then it's one of those... Yeah. What do they call it? Hercules,
yeah.
Yep.
It's good so stands. Low.
Good stands.
It's so low that I have to tune the lowest string. To tune it reliably, I have to tune it with a harmonic because it's so low, the tuner almost doesn't register it.
Tuner's like, that's not even a bass.
It's F sharp one. Yeah. So it's like as low as anything, any part of your signal chain is expecting.
Frequency is F sharp one.
Oh, that's a good question. Man. Yeah, it absolutely chugs. It's I gotta really practice up with this thing because the left hand, right hand relationship, as far as, like I said, the muting and stuff goes, is tricky. Like it is, you think you're doing great and then you like, you know, turn the backing track off and it's like, oh God, like I'm really not doing a good job here. So
the frequency of F sharp, see, that's zero. F sharp one, 43.65.
No, 46.25. You were looking at F.
Oh, yep, you're right. I was looking at F. So F sharp, yeah, 46.25. So,
and yep. The wavelength of that in centimeters, in case you wanted to know.
Wow. 745 centimeters, 7.5 meters.
It's almost as long as the scale length.
Oh my God.
So I was looking at, we were talking about explorers and stuff in the chat over the last week or so. Okay. And I was like, this old thing I can't ever decide on is, do you have to be cool to buy an explorer to like play one, or just having one, just playing one, make you cool? Right. Like it's a fun, you know, funny guitar thought experiment.
Yeah.
And realizing, you know, at the same time, somebody mentioned like Harley Benton makes one. And oh, by the way, I think they're selling in the US now. And I was like, oh, you know, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is how I get an explorer.
But then you didn't get an Explorer.
But then I was looking through all the stuff on their Reverb page, and I was like, uh-oh, this 8-string is way more appealing to me because it's something – I sold my baritone a while ago to get this PRS, and it's it's really unlike a lot of stuff in my collection. It is dramatically unlike anything in my collection. So,
right. It's and in a way fun. That you – like the baritone was unlike – the other things too in some ways, but it wasn't sticking with you, I guess.
It wasn't sticking with me. It was just one of those things that was also an impulse buy that was like, I needed to move gear to get this other thing I really wanted instead.
Yeah.
So that it was on the chopping block. But I think now if I were to like go sell gear to move into something else, I'd have a hard time, at least at this moment, saying I would move the 8-string because I'm having so much fun with it. It's making me think about guitar differently.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a good goal to have. So,
yeah.
Anyway, that's a solid 35 minutes on 8-strings.
That's, I mean, what?
I think it's great, dude.
It's a guitar, What are we doing here? You know?
They're making all kinds of great shit. They have so many models too. So there's going to be something for everyone. Again, the price is just, it makes it such a non-issue.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Cool. The GIF stuff that's been going on in Discord this whole time has been pretty great.
Yeah.
I don't know if lots you've been chugging. Able to, I don't know if you've been able to keep up with it with
a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Pretty fun.
I'm on a slippery slope of growing my hair out and buying an Axe FX. Well, I just got a haircut the other day and I have a Helix.
Up yours.
I got a haircut and a Helix. Fuck you.
Haircut and a Helix. That's a pretty good one.
Yeah. Shall we move onward?
Sure. And I don't think I have any other links, but apparently there is a question from Discord. From Discord? A question from Discord, you say?
Well, yeah, Discord reached out. No, I was talking to Eric earlier today. Hit me with a sound.
Hold on.
First
hold
of
on.
All.
Yep, play a sound.
Yes.
Yes.
Talking to Eric, friend of the show, patron of the show, Eric.
Sure.
And he mentioned something about, I think he got a book by Johnny Marr from the Smiths and such. And he was saying, you know, people can identify guitarists by their style, right? You would know Jimi Hendrix versus James Hetfield, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Does that exist for producers and engineers?
Yeah.
Maybe producers is more common, but for engineers, is that a thing that you notice without knowing who did the record?
I have a couple of times. Yeah, I think so. It's not like everything. Like, you know, you mentioned two guitarists that sound very different, but I also think like guitarists are personalities in a much bigger way than I mean, some producers are, but that's not as much of a cultural focus as guitarists. So
that's what I was going to say. Like, yeah. I think you hear people like Rick Rubin, right? Yeah. You would probably these names that are almost, they're not celebrities, but they're celebrity adjacent. Like they're really close.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rick Rubin, I was thinking of Steve Albini and right. Butch Vig, maybe Bob Rock, like these guys, Mark Trombino. So here's the thing, like Mark Trombino is one of these guys that I don't hear it, but I look into who did a record that I love and it's usually Mark Trombino.
who's the guy that did Deftones a lot? So it's specifically about drums. This is what comes up. That's why I think of him is specifically, and it's like, you know, the White Pony snare drum.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about there?
Terry Date.
Terry Date. That's right. In fact, I have a sample pack, a Terry Date signature sample pack of drums for drum VIs. And the White Pony snare is in it. There it is. Yeah, I mean, that happens. I would say, like, I can count on one hand the number of times I've listened to something and said, that sounds like, and then
that went, sounds like
and
so-and-so.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But it's happened to me a couple of times with Greg Wells, who works at Abbey Road right now. There was the Adele record. Well, I think he probably might have produced all the Adele records, but there's just things there's something about I'm trying to think, identify what is it that makes me think this sounds like a Greg Wells record, and I don't want to just say it's that it sounds really good, but like it does. I don't know. There's something like it's like this, the balance. This is going to sound so stupid. I'm hearing myself about to say these words and realizing how stupid they're about to sound. It's just, I don't know, the balance is perfect in this strange way. There's one song on that Adele record where the drum set, like the toms seem to have so much bottom in them. And it's like, I couldn't ever hope to get that much bottom into toms without them just sounding like a muddy mess. So it has to be a trick, right? And I think there's some little, like, he has the experience, right, of just, he's sculpting it, so I think there's all this bottom. You know, that's what it comes down to. Mm. And then, like, something similar happened. So this musical about, it's The Greatest Showman. It's this musical about P.T. Barnum. And huge jacked man was in it and everything. So
yes.
So he produced that whole soundtrack.
Okay.
And I fucking knew it like right away. Like we're listening to it and it was like, oh, come on. And then
the
sure enough.
Stinks of Greg Wells.
There was something about, what I thought was interesting about that soundtrack was the songs seemed to have like an era in mind. So like one song sounded like the era of like Jennifer Lopez. And then there was like another song that was from this different kind of thing. And so, you know, something that was a little bit more Michael Jackson or something, but in a very modernly mixed way. And there was this, again, this like, I feel like 100% of the sonic spectrum is filled. There are these moments where these like an orchestra hit happens and there's a riser and a bass drop at the same time. And it's like, how do you fit all that shit in? And then I go and like look it up and sure enough on YouTube, there he is like talking about how they produced the whole thing. It's like, there's fucking Greg Wells.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. It's, I think I know of a few engineers and producers and stuff who like do both jobs for a record. Yeah. That's like, but they're part of the, not the marketing for the album, but they're sort of a face in some of the push, right?
Yeah.
And
well, they're becoming more celebrities. It's definitely are, yeah. Like with the rise of YouTube, it's the option is there, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think Andrew I mostly think about Butch Vig in this context, yeah. Because, I remember Foo Fighters put out a record and it's like, and we're going back to Butch Vig. And it was like this big,
yeah.
It was important. And he did the, Silverstone Pickups album that I really love, Widow's Weeds.
Okay. Yeah.
And I saw that he was on it before it came out and I was like, oh, I'm going to love this. Like I just, right. I just knew. Uh-huh. And so it's funny. Like I don't think about that stuff until I'm really loving what I'm hearing, you know, then I'm like, who made this?
That's I want to like,
know
who right, made it. Yeah.
And then, that, and then
that's
it's
exactly
the
same for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it turns into, cause it's they're such an important role in the creation of the finished product, of course, but that has made it to my headphones, but, they're not the name, right? They're not the artist. So it's like,
yeah.
Not as in your face, but it is very much an art form and they're part of like the artist package that is this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
The overlap between like engineering and producing and songwriting and all of this stuff is very interesting to me. And people like Ryan Tedder are somehow doing all of them perfectly, you know?
Yeah, that's cheating.
Yeah, you can't be that good at this stuff.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I think... What's the guy that we know that we don't know? Jared's brother, Josh?
Josh Wilbur, yeah.
Yeah. This has happened recently where it's like, hey, this song I really like, look who did it. It's someone
it's
that we...
Josh,
like.
Josh, yeah.
It's fucking Josh. And like, I've never even met the guy or anything, but that's kind of a fun thing. Like when you start to see the yeah. same staff rolling in on records that you like.
Well, Moontooth, like...
Yeah.
You pointed out to me after I was like, this is like my favorite band for like this calendar yeah. year. And then like months later, Derek's like, hey, did you ever notice that Josh produced that record? I'm like, fuck yeah. me. I mean,
you know
I should have looked because once yeah. again, what is always there with Josh's productions. They're focusing on like rock and metal but they're very loud, very intense, but they still have some dynamics in them. It's not the like crushed loud sound. It's
but they've
like,
got guts.
They've got guts. It's precision. And I think it's a similar thing. It's like managing this low end in a way where the thing is full, but it doesn't sound like the low end is overwhelming and you're not listening past anything. And it's mm-hmm. this very idealized, like very,
The only reason I found that out was thing. That I ordered some Moontooth vinyl and because, you know, you get
a physical object,
you have a thing and on the back there's words and like, you can't see that stuff on
yeah.
your phone. Now they've added personnel yeah. info to Apple Music, but, it wasn't just in your face before. So yeah. I flipped it over and I'm like looking at it. I was like, produced and mixed by Josh Wilbur. And I was like, well, duh.
Well, duh. Like, yeah.
No wonder it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sort of threw this in the chat, the newest Blink-182 album was sort of a tangent on, did you listen to that yet?
I listened to like three songs.
Okay. From the album, not like on, not
yeah.
a catch.
No,
like
I put
an
on the
okay.
album and I listened
okay.
to like the first three songs. Yeah.
Do you find it exhausting to listen to in the same way
Absolutely.
That I do?
Absolutely. I think it sounds fucking terrible.
Yeah. Okay.
Caveat is if you're like, I kind of don't care about Blink-182 anyway. So my opinion doesn't matter.
Well, it's not about the songs. That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not.
I couldn't really hear the songs. That's the truth of it. I couldn't tell if they were any good.
Cause you were too focused on the other stuff or.
I was distracted by it. Yeah. I was distracted by it. There's something, there's some mega intense. It's the thing where every drum sounds like a cannon and every hit is the same loudness that is kind of, it kind of became a thing with metal for a while. And I think that's starting to phase out, but like that's going on right now with Blink-182 drums, but it's also everyone is like so loud that they're
so loud.
They're ducking, like the cymbals are being ducked by the by every snare and tom hit and everything else. And
because it's Travis Barker, there's a fuckload of every drum, right? Yeah, it's like it doesn't even
sounds like it might be great.
Yeah, like it doesn't have time for the note or the strike to sustain long enough.
Yeah.
Before like the compressor relaxes and lets the next thing through, you know?
It's yeah, exactly. I heard they're super compressed, and the release, so compressors have the like the timings, right? The attack and the release. The release is very short. So everything in between
it's like
the loud
pumping.
Hits is coming back up, right? So it's a super loud, obvious example of pumping, especially like whatever the song that it was the second or third song that I was basically like done, but there's some rolling on a cymbal, but it's going like it's ducking in between all these other hits. And I mean, the drums are very loud.
That's what I noticed first.
I mean, I don't know.
It seems like it's like the drums are too, I couldn't hear the, and this isn't about me like being a guitarist. It's just that it was like a drum record. It seemed like a high mix drum record to learn the drum part or something. And I haven't confirmed this.
Yeah. Kind of does sound like that.
I didn't confirm this, but I heard that Travis Barker produced it. So there's that, like, I guess, I don't know, whatever. But it's exhausting to listen to. Like I put it on in the car and I'm like, I don't want to finish this because I'm like fatigued by.
I wonder if I could like open Apple Music and get it to tell me like with sound check how far it turned it. Because here's the other thing. I played it in the car. So I have sound check turned on my phone, which is the thing that normalizes for volume levels or loudness, I should say, not volume. So basically if I set my volume to where I want it to be in the car, I could play a few different records and they're all going to be about right.
Yeah.
And it was quiet sounding. Which is what happens if your record is mastered way too loud. If it doesn't have any headroom, then the average loudness on the record is so high that the normalizing system turns it down. And there aren't peaks going up there to use the rest of that headroom because it's all squished. And so it had that sound to me of like, I was in the car going, it's quieter than music usually is, which I know means it's mixed too loud. And if I turn it up, it sort of annoyingly hurts my ears because it's just like a sausage instead of a waveform that has peaks, you know? It's not. So I don't know. I haven't looked at the measurement, but that's just by ear. It was like, this sounds like it's probably a super duper loudness war casualty.
Yeah. Right. And we haven't talked about the loudness war in a long time. And I feel like that conversation has kind of faded. Like it's just not really in the,
because it shouldn't happen anymore.
Yeah. And this album comes out, like people are all in for the Blink-182 renaissance and that's cool. Like, whatever. Right. The band's back together. Great. Fine.
And that's why I preface that, like, because I don't think I'm a person, like people shouldn't take my opinion on Blink-182's music. So
this is not about the music though.
Exactly. Like,
that's the point. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's too much.
Yeah.
Do you think it'll be their Injustice for All? I don't know.
Injustice for All is such a different thing too. Cause like look on YouTube, if you ever feel yourself with an extra 45 minutes for like
Injustice for Jason.
People asking Jason Newsted about And Justice for All, like, and to just, I don't know what they're thinking he's going to do. Like they're going to get him to like rant about it or something. Cause he fucking doesn't. He's way the fuck too cool. For one thing, to have given a shit in the first place. And for another thing, to give a shit now. And he's like, what are you talking about? Like, you're still talking about that record, aren't you? Okay, enough said, is sort of his sentiment. Yeah. Like, the Incubus record that Skrillex produced.
Oh, yeah. Eight?
Yeah.
Is that Eight?
Yeah. I think it was called Eight. I can't remember any songs from that. Like really, really tried to like it. But again, that was another one where, and I think, you know what, we're bringing it back around. This is like producers that are known for a sound, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you could call Skrillex a producer who's known, obviously, just absolutely incapable, it seems, of making something that isn't that crazy electronic EDM pumpy sound, you know? And and I would say, like, kind of maximized high end, because that's the thing. Like, if you want to make a record unbelievably loud sounding, be careful with the bass, because bass takes up a ton of sonic energy. And to make things super loud, they actually end up sort of like boosting the high end and stuff like that in order to just pump, you know, shove more down that pipe. And that record was just so harsh and grating, you know? And I think, I think that's what it was. It was basically like, you could say it was the mastering. It was probably happening in the mix, but it sounds like mastering that just went wrong.
I have not listened to that album in a really long time. So I'll revisit it soon. I think just with this conversation in mind.
Yeah.
Kind of shortly after it came out, I saw that tour actually. And but I'm a huge Incubus fan, so like I was really more focused on the songs and stuff, I think. I think, like many people in the Blink-182 revival are more focused on like the story of the band coming back together and the songs and stuff like that. They don't care what it sounds like.
Right.
I mean, they care. They don't care, like, the sonic quality of the album. They're not thinking, like, boy, these drums are too loud. No one but other music people are thinking, boy, these drums are too loud.
Yeah. They were kind of too loud, but I could still hear the vocal. Yeah. So we're probably fine. Is, I guess, the answer, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day. Skrillex has aged surprisingly well. Do you mean Skrillex as a
question from the chat.
Oh, you don't mean that he's a vampire?
I mean, maybe.
Could be.
Have you guys watched What We Do in the Shadows?
Yeah, at least two seasons of it.
Okay, we just started it for the first time. Just going to drop that bomb there. So.
Oh, that's, I really had fun. I haven't seen every single episode, but I really have fun with that show.
Should we wrap it up? What do you think?
Sure. I guess that means we're supposed to do questions of the week. It looks like neither of us came up with... Oh, thing of the week. Oh, that's what it is.
Wait. Here's my thing of the week.
Uh-oh. Hold on. Jackson Prism. Oh, God.
I thought you said Jack is in prison. And I was like, he's asleep and a baby. What are you talking about? But you said the Jackson Prism, the pedal. Prism. Here's my recommendation. Yes. Here's my thing of the week. That's it.
Gent.
Get the Harley Benton 8-string. Do it.
You
fucking won't. Get it.
Yeah, just fucking.
You goddamn wuss. Get it.
What's your problem? Asshole, you shill.
Fine, you know what? Fuck you. My recommendation is White Pony. There you go.
White Pony, pretty good. You know what? I went and did a
cool gatefold version. Look at this shit.
I like that. Okay, you know what? So I'll do a thing of the week. Let's think about like doing go backs into your past record history. Because I've done that a little bit. Like I did a little bit of, we talked about this in Discord. I did a little bit of, let's run back through Metallica. Let's see if I still get into the Metallica that I used to listen to. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And
is this, are you looking for if it's aged well or if you're still into it?
I think the second one is the only thing I can really always say for sure. Right. Okay. I mean, I don't know. Although maybe the thing I'm about, so Metallica, I don't know. It cuts both ways because, you know, I can definitely get on and you hear people talk about like the guitar tone on Master of Puppets. And the thing is like, I don't think it's that great. It was probably great then, but this is like what you're saying. Did it age well? Like it's...
There's been more exciting tones since then.
Yeah, and it was good for the time, but that's one of those things. Like we actually do have better tech for that. We can keep instruments in better tune now. We do have amps that are actually more dialed in to achieve this kinds of gain. You know what I mean? Like it actually can be better. So yeah, I don't know. there's definitely some Metallica stuff where it's like, oh, I definitely used to like this song and now I just can't wait to push the skip button. So it's not sticking with me like it always did, but then there's some rippers and I would like to, sometimes you just want to have, I want to have like the guitar solo supercut button or like hit me with, I want to have like the edited versions of these songs where it's like main riff, chorus, solo.
Next. You just want a highlight reel. Yeah.
I just want to hit those, you know, because it's like, oh, yeah, like Sad But True kicks ass. But they do kind of play that same thing for a long
time.
Too
long.
Don't they?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, yeah. When I was 13, it was like, fuck, you know? But anyway. go by Deftones. Kind of before White Pony. There's a lot of just sort of like kind of out of tune stuff that doesn't really jive with me anymore. I'm not into Chino's vocal at all until White Pony. And I used to be.
Yeah.
So something different about me, like that I tolerated it back then, you know, but.
Well, it's like at the time you're also, you know, spreading your proverbial wings as far as like discovering music. And you're like, it's not a phase, mom. It's that kind of that vibe of like,
I know
you're finding your independence in that way. So
the
fact that it's dissonant and maybe out of tune and not that good is what makes it fun. It makes it good at the time because it's so like counterculturey to what you're used to, you know? So
there's been several. So I have done a bit of this. So just over, I don't know, maybe the past year, I've just like been like, you know what? I haven't listened to in 100 years, and like just dig out old stuff that was like, oh man, this was like our record when I was playing in a band with these guys or whatever. And this is going back to like high school, and there's some real shit piles in that I've discovered. I've just been like, I cannot listen. Like this song used to slay me, you know what I mean? And now it's like, I'm hearing like timing problems in the recording. Like I'm talking about like bands that, you know, they're indie bands that couldn't afford much for their recordings. And it really, it fucking shows. And now I'm listening to it going, oh my God, like this is fucking terrible.
I remember when Beggars came out from Thrice.
Yeah.
And I was like with you guys that weekend.
Uh-huh.
And, or, you know, right in that summer, whenever it came out. And we listened to it all the damn time.
Yeah.
It was constantly on. And
I haven't dug that out in a while. Are you about to break my heart?
No, I think it still slaps. Like it's okay, still good. I have it on vinyl. Like it's great.
Yeah. But Thrice was never one of those bands that like wasn't able to afford decent recordings too. Like their very earliest recording, was there. The thing about them is just their transition from through sort of genres, I think.
Right.
You know, which is very interesting.
When Beggars hit, it was like that was a big genre change album.
Yeah.
At the time.
Was that right after Alchemy Index?
Must have been.
Or was there one between? I can't remember. But yeah, because they were spreading out. They did Alchemy Index, which got a little bit different genre-wise, but then that's when they started to transition away from the kind of more metal sounding stuff. Mm-hmm. And then that has sort of rolled and ebbed as the waves in an ocean over the next few albums. So,
whoa, Justin,
I meant it.
That was deep.
So, I guess the tip of the week, tip, yeah,
thing of the week,
thing of the week. What's the T for?
Is the T for tip?
What's the T for the tip, or is the T for the top? Or the anyway, dig out. So think of something that you used to love when you were a teenager, presuming you're not a teenager, and try it out again. Is that the possibility that you're a teenager?
Yeah. In which case, check back on this in like 20 years.
Yeah. Probably don't do what I'm saying for Rafi or whatever. Just wait and come back when you're more closer to our age. So,
yeah. Cool, man.
Rad. That's all. All that remains is for me to push a few buttons and thank a few patrons and stuff. I mean, so thanks to you, the listeners and the viewers, and thanks especially to those of you who have decided to support the show by becoming a Patreon supporter. My heart goes with you. I don't, you know.
Hmm.
Right?
We're
It sounds like it's
has
over.
Really,
the sounds mood like it's has changed. Over. I'm canceling the show. This is mood our final
changed
episode
dramatically
now.
In the last 45 seconds.
These
are getting
I
really
do these
solemn.
Things, don't I? Anyway, links.
Links to everything in the places you find
in
links.
In the show notes, in the places. Discord, be a supporter. Join the newsletter if you want.
if you want.
You fucking want to. And then, yeah. And so that's good. I like it. Oh, look at that. And we're over it. I just couldn't see. I blocked my clock. We're over an hour, everybody. Congratulations.
Don't you hate it when you get clock blocked? Ugh. Let's get out of here.
Let's do it. All right. I will thank the supporters this week who are going to be, and it's going to be these people, Nick Greenwood, Carson Ricketts, Matthew Fenslaw, Ryzen Wolf, Brian Gower of the Tone Jerks podcast, Andrew Walsh of Andrew's Alcove, Jamie Evans, Sean Wright of Lollygagger Effects, Big Daddy Doug, and it's just Eric again.
Hell yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you all.
Yeah.
Thank you all very much. Thank you all.
All right. See you next time.
See you next time. Bye-bye. Ha ha.